Welcome to Nine Bob Note with Paul Isles Rush and Ken Moss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Nine Bob Note. I am Paul.
I'm Ken.
And I'm Simon.
He's back.
And it's about time.
What have we got for this episode, Simon?
Oh, I get to choose.
You do.
Marvellous. Well, this is actually a follow-on from one of your earlier episodes.
Oh, God.
Goths.
Didn't see that coming.
No.
And this is actually a follow-on from the episode that you did about steps. And
illogical follow-through. Well,
there is a logical follow-through, because you were talking about how listening to steps helped you come out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Goth music, and particularly the goth musical scene, is one of the biggest things that helped me come to terms with my sexuality. Because I was a goth.
Yeah.
And when I was a late teenager, early 20s, and knowing pretty well where my hormones were pointing, I thought, I should really get down to one of these gay club places. But I was a teenage Iron Maiden fan, so I had long hair and Iron Maiden t-shirt and the double denim and didn't look particularly gay. And I would dutifully trot along to the local gay club on a Friday night and get utterly ignored. Exactly the same bouncer every single week would say, do you know that this is a gay club? We don't let straights in here. If anybody said anything to me in there, it was always negative and derogatory, and because I didn't look like
a gay.
Well, no, at the time, it was because I didn't look like I was trying to be Andy Bell, lead singer for Erasure.
No, I know. Was that the...
That was the look. That was very definitely the look. And I didn't fit into that and got completely ostracized, no matter how many times I went there or how sociable I tried to be. And I'm not an inherently sociable person. So that was a struggle. And on the Saturday night, I'd go with my housemates to the local rock club and have a brilliant time. I was more into the sort of gothy side. Always loved Iron Maiden. But it was really the alternative crowd who didn't have a problem with my sexuality. And the lads there were basically, well, as long as you're not going to be touching up my ass, we don't have a problem with this at all. Whereas in the gay bar, it was, you don't look the part, so therefore you can't possibly belong.
That's a very interesting thing. We've spoken on a number of episodes about things like that. And I believe the phrase is internalized homophobia, isn't it? Where, well, it's not even that, is it? It's just if you don't fit in with how the gays look or with the music that they like, you can't possibly be one of us.
When I would say things like that, I mean, this is a few years later, but when I would say things like that to friends, and particularly when I was in Newcastle, I was quite heavily involved with the LGBT society. And there were some people who were saying, well, the way that you're saying that is internalized homophobia. And I said, no, it isn't. I don't have any internalized homophobia. I just think that those people in that club were dicks. And that it's not homophobic, and it is not internalized, because I've been quite vocal about it. And sort of a little bit later than that, because that would have been to the early 90s and sort of later on in the sort of mid to late 90s, where I did look a bit more the part, because I had to cut my hair to go to do my master's degree and looked a bit more sensible and traditional. And actually, the big thing that people had a problem with was the fact that I had long hair. You couldn't possibly be gay and have long hair.
Really?
Really.
Now, that surprises me. So this was the early 90s?
Pretty much right the way through until about maybe 10 years ago.
So what was a gay haircut? I know that there was the sort of the duck bill thing.
What, that make you look like Tintin?
Yes, basically.
Short. Some people would have skinheads and stuff. Some people would have short back and sides, you know, and a flat top.
Is this why I've been attractive to gays since I was 25? Because I've got a head like a cue ball.
I have no idea what you're doing to make yourself attractive to the gays.
Neither do I.
It just comes naturally.
Well,
but
hi, boys.
Bottle it and sell it.
You see me on a billboard poster like Ava Herzegova. Hello, boys.
Hello.
What, with the push-up bra?
Hello, gays. Well, the state of me at the minute, yes. Getting back to your gay career.
I'm not sure I'm professionally gay.
Oh, it's on your CV and everything.
It isn't. There's enough shit on my CV already. But no, you could not be seen to be gay and have long hair.
No, I can see where that's...
That sounds utterly ridiculous. Yeah.
It is utterly ridiculous. Considering the amount of time that the stereotypical gays would spend doing their hair that was like 50 millimeters long, then why not have proper long hair and do it properly? Yeah,
I don't actually spend that long looking after mine. I wash it and then I tie it back and let it dry.
Whereas I start shaving and don't stop.
More detail than any of us needed, but thank you for sharing.
Hello, boys.
And oh, you wonder
why. Smooth as a baby's behind.
Oh, dear God.
Are you trying to get yourself
cancelled? I'm holding you responsible for this, Simon.
Oh, I take the blame for pretty much anything. But the point that I'm making, rather than boo-hoo, didn't I have a terrible time of it, I didn't get a shag when I was... Which is an element of the week. Because, you know, when you're 20, you'd quite like to get your end away.
Well,
and there were some people, if you saw them outside of the club where their mates weren't around, would be chatty and friendly and flirty.
So they just didn't want to be seen to be attracted to you.
See, you know when you take the piss out of me when I, as you put it, Greek?
Yeah.
You open my eyes to a lot of things. But the stuff...
Insert your own jokes there.
Not without lube. But I think just in years gone by, not so much now, but I just see in years gone by how awfully lonely it must have been being gay and not... There was no gaydar, fab gay, whatever. There was no Tinder. You couldn't dial a shag. If you didn't get lucky in a gay bar or a gay club, you were going home alone.
There were phone dating lines. You used to have Lonely Heart ads in the back of magazines. I don't know when they started. Certainly they were around sort of late 80s. There were phone equivalents, and it was a premium phone line, but you could phone up and listen to people's voicemails, really. So you could dial a shag.
Well, yeah, but that was only sort of listen to my voice sort of dating, and if you like my voice, here's my PO box or whatever. Yeah.
Here's a picture of my penis.
Here's a picture of my cock. Fancy it, come round. I'm not bothered what your face looks like, just come round. Yeah. Which is online dating, in air quotes, seems to be now. I've been talking to a girl at work. I've become a sort of agony uncle. She's in her early 20s and telling me all about her dating tribulations. It just sounds like a fucking nightmare now, dating, because nobody goes out and meets anymore. They don't go out clubbing and drinking. It's all done online. And that, to me, sounds like hell on earth.
But is it worse than Simon's described experience of going to a club on your own and just standing there being insulted all
night? I suppose if it's face to face, I wouldn't like to say I've not lived through Simon's dreadful experience. Well, I sort of have, because I got rebuffed all the time in nightclubs. I was a very awkward late teens, early 20s thing.
We spent many nights being rebuffed in Tokyo Joe's in Preston.
Well, I did. You pulled way more women than I did, and then they were cruelly rebuffed. But you were the one doing it.
That's nonsense, listener.
Whereas I used to get the same people week after week would come up and say, you shouldn't be here, purely based on how I looked. And it wasn't, they hadn't met me before and they didn't know what the situation was. It was just, you don't fit in with our particular tribe. And in the end, you know, after a few months, I just said, fuck it, I don't fit in here. And I went to where I had an entertaining evening without a possibility of a shack at the end of it.
Yeah, I did come to terms with my own complete lack of success in my clubbing career. Oh, God, they were hateful. I don't know why we look back so fondly on those clubbing days, because they were just nightmarish. There was no success whatsoever. I wasn't a natural dancer. I wasn't a natural flirt. It just wasn't my natural environment at all. And yet we kept going back week after week. Well, I suppose in those days, it was the only place we could go. At 11 o'clock, you went to a club or you went home. Mm. You know, it was either go home or go and humiliate yourself. But there was alcohol if you went to humiliate yourself. Yeah. So swings and roundabouts. I think it's just that awkward phase that people go through where you're still finding out where you fit in. And there are a lot of horrible years in between when you find out what you actually are, not gay or straight or what have you, but just where you slot in and where you feel and how comfortable you are in your own skin.
Yeah. And actually, one of the biggest things that made a difference to me was meeting Lulu and Tree that you met.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Because the three of us met through slightly unusual circumstances. But we were going around the gay club and getting exactly the same thing happening. The only one that anybody had any interest in at all was Lulu. who was the straight one of the three of us. And then we discovered the goth club, goth clubs and goth pubs. And we're welcomed with open arms. And it was just sort of, you like the music? Fantastic. Kind of looked the part, even more fantastic. And you know what? Fellas at the end of the night are fairly sexually fluid and might prefer to cop off with a woman, but you know, any holds a goal.
You pair of filthy bastards. Outrageous on this pod of all pods.
I was just going to say, because in Preston, I will never claim to be anywhere near a goth or anything like that, but the sort of the dance music that main nightclubs used to play was never really of any interest to me. But there was a club in Preston called The Warehouse, which was like an indie club. It had different floors. One of them was like the ultimate goth. Well, I think it was in the basement, actually, the goth one. But
yeah, the top floor was where all the cannabis crypt was. the cannabis level, you could just go up and get high for free.
Yeah.
Just secondary.
But I always felt much more at home and accepted there, and not less threatened. I never felt threatened mainly because I wasn't out, but in The Warehouse, I always felt more at home. So those, again, I'm doing the air quotes, though no one can see you, those alternative groups of people are generally a lot more accepting, aren't they? Or they were.
And I think an element of that is that that's a subculture that you choose to become a part of.
Yeah.
Whereas at the time, the gay community was a subculture that you didn't really have any choice but join in with. And the people who would go along and frequent Canal Street and places like that were ones who otherwise would want to be part of the mainstream pubbing crowd, but because of the way their hormones pointed, weren't. So they set up their own little alternative normality.
Yeah.
Whereas the rock crowd, the punks, the goths that I used to hang about with, the last thing that they wanted was to be part of any kind of normality.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I told you I could come up with a non-political
thing. I know. You've done extremely well.
So next time.
Yeah.
I feel like there should be some sort of Doctor Who next time trailer coming up here.
I was just going to say.
We're just arguing like fuck.
Yeah. Being a Doctor Who fan is quite a good example of that, isn't it?
I was going to say, because I was part of the Preston Doctor Who group, and that was a fucking collection of misfits. My goodness me. Told this story before, but there were four of us that were normal. We knew where the bar of soap was in the morning, and the rest of them was just, where's the nearest black t-shirt? That'll do. That'll cover up the body odour.
And it doesn't.
It's amazing how it doesn't work. But that little group, when we've been to conventions and what have you, we used to travel up and down the country, but once a year we'd go on a pilgrimage to a Doctor Who convention. They don't exist anymore, really. They tend to be comic cons now, and the Doctor Who conventions. Well,
there are a few of them. Utopia's not terribly long ago, and there's Dimensions on Time.
I know, but they're nothing like what they used to be. The glory days are gone. They were outrageously good. Oh, they were. I cite the Doctor Who convention where we first didn't meet. Doctor Who and the Daleks 2. Still, hands down, the best Doctor Who convention I've ever been to. It was distilled stardom in one convention. It was awesome. And the poor man that had organised it, financially ruined. But it was worth every penny of the money that I didn't have to spend on it. It was an awesome event. But it was filled to capacity with people who just didn't fit anywhere else. Mm. And you do get that sort of vibe from Doctor Who convention. And once the new series started in 2005, they were diluted with families and kiddies coming through that just liked Doctor Who. But up until that point, it had been the misfits. They had nowhere else to go. And this was their chance to come together with other unwashed social inadequates, basically. But it's the same sort of principle.
I mean, having helped organise that convention, I'd have to say that the stars were beyond lovely.
Oh, yes.
Every single one of them. The fans who felt that they were important because they were fans with a capital F and had a degree of notoriety online were utter drama queens. And there were quite a number of others who are still quite big names and people that you wouldn't expect who were just sort of... And I was running the reception desk and I'd have these people turn up and say, don't you know who I am? Oh, fuck's sake. I knew who you were. I wouldn't have to ask. So it wasn't the people who'd actually made a living doing Doctor Who. And how did we get to this from Goths?
groups that didn't quite fit anywhere else.
Which describes the gay scene at the time. It doesn't describe the Goths or the Metalers or anything like that, because we were a group of people who chose to be where we were. Most of the people on the gay scene didn't choose to be there. They were there because of an accident of hormones.
So sidestepping just ever so slightly to the gay scene when you were at uni. Now, I know that you weren't out when you were at uni. You were questioning, as they say in the biz. But what was the gay scene like at uni?
I don't know. I didn't. We had an LGB, as it was at the time, society. But it was like three people for the whole university. And they were people that we all saw, and that I include myself in it, as weirdos. So there was literally one lesbian, one gay person, and one bisexual person who were the LGB society. And that was it. But because I hadn't told anyone, apart from a very select one person, I told myself that I didn't want to be involved in that. So I don't know what the scene was like in Lancaster. I don't know what it was. I didn't go along to any of the LGB events because essentially I was trying to distance myself from it. But they were seen as weirdos, but they weren't the scene people. If they'd have gone out on a night in Canal Street, because this was exactly the same time that Queer as Folk came out, so none of them would have ventured down Canal Street because they weren't the Stuart and Vince prototypes.
And actually, if you think about Queer as Folk, everybody that they interact with either looks very stereotypical or has the piss taken out of them for not being stereotypical. So there's the Undertaker blokey. There's the Doctor Who fan. All the ones that don't fit into a pretty narrow stereotype were figure of fun.
Yeah.
So with the goth scene, getting back to that, it got you into an acceptance area.
Yeah.
But not necessarily a gay area. It was just springboarded off the back of it.
It was a very sexually fluid area. So as well as the goths, there was an awful lot of a transgender community who used to come along and find out. Because everybody used to wear over-the-top makeup. And you'd have cis blokes turning up in a skirt because they fancied wearing a skirt, and cis women who'd turn up in dinner jackets. And it wasn't any element of cross-dressing. It was, if anything, it was a kind of fairly stylized fancy dress, really.
Imagine how fun I could have at a goth disco.
Well, goth disco.
Is that why you never see any Cockney goths? They're much too cheerful. Flash. Double flash.
we're aiming to go to Whitby. Why don't you come along?
Is that not the steampunk festival?
No, they do a steampunk festival at Whitby, but no, there's a goth festival that's been going for about 30 years.
I've never gone goth. Do you think I could pull it off?
There's a lot of Victoria.
You answered that far too.
There's a lot of Victoriana in goth.
Yeah, I think you'd make a really good goth.
Brabinger, bring me a pint of ink and my longest quill pen.
But the nights out are fun. I mean, whether you like the music or not, I really do. It was the music that got me into it in the first place, because Susie and the Banshees can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned.
So goth, good gateway drug into being a gay?
No. Goth, fantastic night out. Doesn't matter whether you're gay or not.
Yeah, and that's the point. If you go to a gay club, it's about being gay. If you go to a goth club, it's just about...
Yeah. I mean, you might get ostracised if you go in and down talk the Fields of the Nephilim or something like that. Something important.
There's just white noise at this point. I don't know any of these. You got me at Sushi and the Band. Sushi? Sushi, yes. The Japanese cover band.
Well, one of their earliest singles was called Hong Kong Garden.
different country. Anyway, I think it's time.
Not anymore.
Oh, God. Now, how do you feel about British colonisation? Should we rate this in feather boas?
I can tell you how I feel about Chinese colonisation at the moment.
How many feather boas is you giving being a goth?
For me, personally, 5.
Nice.
And they're black.
Black feather boas. Some goths are black. You're allowed to be black and goth.
You've met my friend Dean, haven't you?
No.
Well, you've talked to
I've
her.
I've talked to her.
Because she and I met through the goth scene in Belfast. That's how I met Preacher as well.
She's an Irish black goth.
No, she's a Trinidadian black goth who was studying in Belfast at the same time that I was.
Wow.
And we were housemates.
Think of the Venn diagram that she covers.
Is she a lesbian?
She lives in San Francisco.
Say no more.
There aren't enough circles in the world to make that diagram, are there? Well, I feel very, very underqualified to even comment on this. I'm going to take a back seat. I have nothing. I have no idea about goth culture. I have loved listening to your story, but I am not qualified to even begin to rate this. So I'm going to abstain for once.
Ooh.
Have you ever abstained from this before?
No. You've broken anything. The system.
Hold on, me.
I completely agree. I really like the idea of the sort of alternative culture being an alternative to the alternative culture. I'm going to give it 4 black feather boas.
Racist.
And do you still do screening queens?
Yeah, we
do.
Yeah.
Would you like to do a screening queen?
Absolutely.
Yes. At least we don't need to pay for the jingle this time.
For Screening Queens this time around, it's tempting to make a music recommendation, but goth music really isn't for everybody. And if you were going to discover it through music, you'd probably have discovered it already.
So Cradle of Filth
isn't goth and is shit.
Do you know, just as an aside, it was only somebody I used to work with that told me that Cradle of Filth is actually a real thing and not something made up for the IT crowd. I honestly thought...
Well, no, it's a massive, massive band. Terrible, but massive. No, I'm going to recommend a film.
A film?
Yes, and I'm going to recommend the most hilarious film about a goth you will ever see. I'm going to recommend Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh.
I'm quite happy to watch it again, just for...
Another 2 points.
How is the head?
I've never had any complaints.
Ba-dum-tsh.
What a film.
Good God. On that note, on that 9 Bob note, should we sign it off before this descends any further?
Thank you very much, Simon, for taking us to the dark underworld. And thank you very much for Ken for threatening to become a goth. We'll be back very soon with more insanity.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Nine Bob Note featured Paul Isles Rush and Ken Moss. Title music was by Mark Scheiman, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.